Hello and welcome to another elevated microphone episode of The Awesome Village. My name is Greg and joining me is...
Ryan.
John.
Glenn.
Yeah, we're trying to fix our sound problems.
Yeah, it was brought to our attention that...
Thanks for feedback, finally.
Yeah. Yeah, that you know, we could do something to increase our sound and... Apparently, all this time, you guys have heard Ryan criticize how I hold the microphone.
Yeah, you might be, you figured something out, man. We'll see, because, you know, when this podcast comes out, we'll see if you...
I do love that you are currently holding your microphone, though, like Bob Barker.
Well, whatever.
You just need one of the skinny ones. Mm. So, what have you guys been up to?
Not a whole lot, really. Just watched a bunch of stuff this week.
Yeah. We got some stuff to talk about. Yeah. But, no, not much. I got a new TV.
Really?
Did you really?
Yeah. No, so we had a an LED TV, and it started to get a shadow, like, right in the middle of it, and it just started getting darker and darker. And when we looked it up, apparently one of the LED strips, like, is kind of starting to go out. So,
nobody repairs TVs anymore. You might as well just get it.
They're disposable. Sure. So,
I was told they're quite affordable now.
Yeah, I mean, we got a 65-inch QLED TV, and I mean, it was...
55 inches are like $300.
Right.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how much...
But the weird thing was the 60-inch and the 65 were the same price.
I think I'll go with the 65.
I mean, why not get the extra 5 inches, right?
Sometimes the extra 5 inches...
I was waiting.
Really,
I knew it was coming.
I'm just saying.
But... Yeah, the 4K Blu-rays look pretty awesome on it.
I'm sure.
I unfortunately cannot go 5 inches larger on my TV because it's perfectly between two windows, and if I go higher than 65, it just ain't gonna look right.
Your house can't handle more than 5 more inches.
That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, it's crazy how affordable.
I'm gonna get it filled as best as it can be filled.
how affordable TVs are now. Remember when they used to be like $5,000?
Yeah, you'd have to get like a Best Buy like credit account to get a TV.
Then. Yeah.
I had a package come in shortly before I came to meet you guys that includes the hot sauces that we are going to use for our little thing that you and I are going to do, Ryan.
Okay.
You know. Is it like the hot ones?
Well, they're kind of funnily named. I saw them in another video, but it's Professor Asburn's – no, it's Dr. Asburn's hot sauce, and then there's Professor Fart Pounder's.
None of those sound appealing.
Well, that's the thing.
I do like the flavor.
And to surprise you, I'm also bringing over some truffle hot sauce. Well, not to surprise, but like.
Right. Well, are we just like.
I think we need to get some wings. We're going to air fry some wings, and then we'll put the sauce on them.
I don't remember.
Ovi wants to do it now, and so does my friend David.
All right, so we just. Yeah. Let me know when to show up at your house.
I can do the camera if you want.
Awesome, yeah.
I don't know the exact date. I know it's coming up. So if one of y'all remembers to look it up, remind me. But I think they're going to be reselling the one chip challenge again. Mm. And it's supposed to be a new one, and it's supposed to turn your tongue like blue or some shit.
Blue?
Something like that. So maybe we can do that on the podcast. I don't know how much it'll cost, but we'll see.
Blue?
Interesting.
You ready for another Death Nut?
Man, there's a new one out. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I saw the hot ones. They sell hot ones like home game.
Oh, they sell glad you said that. There's hot ones potato chips.
Well, I don't have a gallbladder anymore, so I got to be careful with how I eat these spicy things. Look at this.
Somebody's in my front door.
Someone's at John's house.
This is some bullshit.
Who is it? And tell them to can you speak through a speaker already?
Yeah, my wife's there. She'll just answer the door.
Okay. then that ruins it. I was going to say tell them to that we're on the air and they need to stop.
I think it's actually our good friend Amy.
There we go.
Hey, man.
Well, Amy, if you're listening to this at all.
Poor Amy's hot water heater went out, so she was coming take a shower at my house and watch The Bachelor with Karen.
Hot water.
Don't you love it how we call it a hot water heater? Why does it need to be heated if it's already hot water?
Well, that's like when everyone says, like,
it should be a cold water heater, right?
Can you warm this up for me? You can't warm things in any other direction.
Yeah.
It only can be warm. You can't cooling down. You can't cool things in other directions.
Mm-hmm. The English language.
We're just superfluous.
Yeah.
Let's talk about movies and TV stuff.
We're going to do that. and to start with.
I'm here now.
Let's go from confusing things to some magical things, specifically some light and magical things.
Glenn, take it away. You were the one who told us about this. Because
mm-hmm.
My first question, is this like brand new? Like, did they release the entire thing at once?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
Yeah, this is a miniseries, which I don't know, I guess they could do more if they want to, but it's on Disney Plus. It's Light and Magic, and it's basically the story of the invention of the company Industrial Light and Magic. How you know, it was just a bunch of kids in the 70s that got hired to do Star Wars by George Lucas because he had all these, you know, kooky ideas, and they were trying to think of affordable ways to bring them to the screen, and how it grew into this company that's, you know, on the cutting edge of special effects. And it's a lot of interviews with I mean, George Lucas, but a lot of filmmakers, a lot of people that have been in the company since the beginning. And if you're a movie fan, this is just an amazing look into this company and just the special effects in general.
Yeah, I think the thing I liked about it, I mean, we don't have to talk about, we all know, I mean, the incredible effects that they've done. They've won countless Oscars. But, like, I didn't realize that Lucas didn't bring everybody in from the original Star Wars to Empire. I thought that drama was kind of interesting.
It was.
I don't even know if it was drama. It was more like just
business.
Right. And I thought that was kind of curious. And I just, I like the fact that, like, when it started, none of them, like, if none of them could have did it on their own. Like, it was basically Lucas saying, well, I need to do this. No one can do it. I know a guy who can do one thing.
Right.
And I contacted that one guy, and he's like, oh, well, I know someone who can do the other thing you need. And it's like, that's how
they all kind of went to school together.
And honestly, after y'all told me about it, and you said it was really good, I started watching it, and granted, I did have my kid was, like, yelling in my ear or whatever. After the first 20 minutes, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to make it through 6 hours of this, because it's just them hiring people to do different things. But once you get past the 20 minutes, it is fantastic.
Well, I only watched the first episode, but I do love that the first episode ends with George Lucas going, and I was pissed off. I'm like, yes.
But no, it's very interesting. I mean, they go through the whole creation of the company that would become Pixar. Now, that was originally part of ILM until it was sold to Steve Jobs. Which, by the way, the first animation, did you notice, that Pixar ever did was in Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
What was that again?
It was the model of the Genesis.
Yeah, the video wave. Of Genesis.
Yeah, it was only like, what, 30 seconds. But that was the first animation that Pixar ever did.
I was talking to John before we recorded it. Like, the documentary made me want to watch Dragon Slayer
again. Oh, yeah.
I haven't seen it since I was a little kid. Yeah, but, like, they really talked that movie up a lot. Like, they did a lot of work on that.
The interesting thing I thought was, at first, where George Lucas basically is like, we need to keep this company going while I write the Star Wars movie. So he just, like, said, work for my friends. And then after a while, it's like they started hiring them out to whoever.
Yeah.
But
I cheated a little bit when I started watching it, because I wanted to know, like I didn't know if the whole thing was done or if there was going to be more episodes. So I peeked to the title of the final episode, and it had to do with dinosaurs. So I'm like, oh, it's going to end with Jurassic Park, and that's going to be the finale. But I like how it actually went all the way to The Mandalorian.
Right.
Which, when The Mandalorian came out, I was like, yeah, these are really cool effects. I had no idea.
It's all effects. Like, it's nothing but effects.
What they did in The Mandalorian, like, I was like, my jaw was on the floor. I was like, I didn't even know that these effects were happening. It was right. So impressive.
And I don't think a lot of people realize how important The Abyss was for CGI, because that there was a lot having to do with the water creature and how that led into the Terminator. Which, did you see the episode with Terminator 2?
Mm, I saw the whole thing.
Were you kind of as disturbed to me as Robert Patrick running around in his underwear and that
with the gridlines all over his face and body?
He didn't know they were filming.
And those guys are so good. They were like, they noticed he has a bit of an awkward walk, like almost like a little bit of a limp. So they incorporated that into the
T-1000. Yeah.
It's incredible stuff.
But yeah, and I don't know. I just love Phil Tippett, the guy with the long beard. I thought his whole story about how he had anxiety and he would get to go to his model room to kind of cope. And
the best part.
The only problem with Phil Tippett, though, is that when you watch the movies it made us with Jurassic Park. It's very tragic.
But the best part of the documentary was the story. I think he's the one who tells about his daughter in the very end of the series.
Oh, yeah.
That
was awesome.
Yeah.
But it's on Disney Plus. They're all out right now. Definitely watch this. I'll probably watch this again.
John's right. The first episode is the slowest,
but it's only like the first, not even half of the first episode.
Get through that, you're going to fly through, especially if you love films.
Yeah. And there's a cool sequence involving Willow, which I appreciate.
And how funny was the scene where all the guys were just running around like dinosaurs?
Yeah.
Because they're trying to figure out how the Gallimimus were going to actually run.
So Well, Ryan might be the most hated man at this table, but the most hated man on the internet is on Netflix currently.
This is another one of those things where I just happen to go on Netflix on a certain day, and and I am the most hated man at this table.
That's true.
I don't give a
shit. Right.
I really don't care.
We all love you.
I tolerate you.
You all do, but I think outside of this room, Greg's probably...
Oh, you mean like more people in general hate you than any of us?
Oh, definitely. Okay. Yeah, definitely. Greg's probably second.
Yeah, probably.
Then John, and I told you, Glenn is like Chewbacca. Everybody loves Glenn.
I'm Chewbacca.
Yeah, everybody loves
Chewy.
Yeah, Chewy.
Bring him a pork.
So, I didn't know anything about this guy. It's basically about the start of this website at the very beginning of the internet, pretty much. And it was called isanyoneup.com.
The internet is much older than this, but it was.
I'm sorry. Social media was just starting
I think it's towards like the end of the MySpace days.
Right. Facebook Twitter had just started and was becoming big, and he created this website called isanyoneup.com, and it was basically a site for revenge porn. Which, for those who don't know, if you know you're lucky enough to have a hot chick send you like a nudie picture while you're dating her, and then she breaks your heart. Hey, you want to get back at her? Go to this site and upload that picture like an asshole.
And apparently, that'd be a good commercial.
Yeah, there you go. Apparently, a lot of people were doing this, and this guy was making a lot of money on it. But the problem was, I mean, there's lots of problems, but the big one was that a lot of these women were claiming that they didn't send these photos to anyone. They took them in the privacy of their own home, and they don't know how it got on this site. So they're claiming that they were hacked some kind of way, so it leads to, you know, was this guy involved in these people's accounts being hacked and invading their privacy? And really, that's a big part of it, but the main part of it is what a piece of shit this guy is.
He is like the most unsympathetic, sociopathic narcissist he was on Anderson Cooper, and they do this interview, and he was probably like, I'm really winning this. But like, he's the most ridiculous asshole.
There's one part where this one girl was talking about how when her picture got put up, and I mean the documentary is very honest. Some of the girls say, "Yeah, I sent it to this guy. We were dating for a while, and I couldn't believe he did this." Blah 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 blah. And when she found out about it, she messaged this man and was like, "Look, please take this down. This is ruining my life. It's, you know, I'm having anxiety. I'm suicidal about all this. I'm just." And his response was like, "LOL." That's how he responded to these.
And there were even men that got ruined by this. It was like these guys. This dude was in a punk band, and it was like, you know, kind of a joke. Like he would, you know, took a picture of himself showing him his junk, and he left his phone on like the table in between like a set, and someone randomly, you know, picked it up and sent his picture in.
So this is only three episodes on Netflix. They're about 45 minutes to an hour. If anyone because my girlfriend watched it with me, and after the first episode, she's like, I can't watch anymore. So you can watch the rest of it. If this asshole gets what's coming to him, I'll continue watching it. But she was so pissed off at this guy in the first episode, she had to stop. And for those who may have those concerns...
Does he get his comeuppance?
Well, a Marine comes after him, and that dude is my hero.
Mm-hmm. Is it John Cena?
I was about to say, did he take...
You got pictures of my wife!
Did he take a picture of his wife?
this guy is, like, really smart who goes after him, and it's really good. Like, actually, by the time the second episode ended, I was just like, how are they going to wrap this up in one more episode? And they did a good job. It was...
Well, but the funny thing, too, is like a lot of it – and this is what was interesting about a lot of these sort of assholes. They are almost like playing a character because he wasn't really making the money that he claimed he was. Like you see him living this lavish lifestyle, but it turns out that was like a huge mirage.
You know, a lot of people talk about like Logan Paul and those guys as like these trolls. They're not trolls.
Oh, yeah.
They're just guys who are YouTubers who you can call them millennials. They don't try to... This guy
is malicious.
This guy, like, almost killed people, basically, because of what he was doing. So, I mean, he's basically one of the very first internet trolls, I guess, is a good way to classify him. But, yeah, it's on Netflix. They do it again. They're good with their documentaries.
Well, look, hated men on the internet, then hated men on islands. That's right. Fuckboy Island season 2.
You're the only one who still watches this.
I know it's a phenomenal. You need to watch the show, Ryan. You would love it.
I don't doubt it.
You would absolutely love it. First of all, I know you like Nikki Glaser, so
she sounds hot.
You've seen her on the roasts.
I can't recall.
I'm not on.
That's all right.
But
she's very funny too.
That's not important.
Well, the first season
I
was.
I mean, if you're a comedian, then kind of.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's true.
The first season was these three women and these 24 guys, 12 of which were self-proclaimed F-boys, and the other 12 were self-proclaimed nice guys. And then the season ended with this shock or whatnot. So the second season, you kind of think, oh, cool, we're going to get more of the same, whatever. I did not expect some of the twists that were in the season, kind of brilliantly so. But it's another season where there are, you know, these three women who are trying to find relationships, and these guys come to the island, which they kind of did really good with the casting because they all kind of look, maybe these are fuckboys. But when they get to the island, you kind of start to see some of the things that that make them one way or the other. And there are some surprise returns this season.
This is Netflix, right?
No, this is HBO Max.
Oh, okay. Do they release them all, or is it?
Apparently, like, I think they release them in chunks. They're all out now. The finale was like last week.
Gotcha.
But it has a nice little twist ending. It's just look, reality shows are kind of a dime a dozen. I like competition ones, but this is just Nikki Glaser's sense of humor and just the setup in general. You gotta watch the show. Okay. Like I can't recommend it enough.
Nikki Glaser is very funny. She's got a new HBO Max comedy special.
Yeah, I think it premiered the same day as the F-Boy Island did.
It was funny.
Hopefully they survive the merger.
Yeah.
They probably will, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I think people are, like, if you dig into, like, what the numbers are for that, it's a little bit different than people realize. But who would like to tell us about Station 11?
I think I'm the only one to watch it. And it's been out for a little while. It's an HBO Max show, which, luckily, I mean, it was only meant to be one season. It was a limited series, so we don't have to worry about
that.
You
didn't talk about this last week?
I said I'd watch like the first episode, but now I finished it. I'm not going to talk much more about it. It was very interesting, and it was just unlike any other post-apocalyptic thing I've ever seen. So, I mean, it was 10 episodes that are very interesting, some nice little twists and turns in it, and I just had a really good time watching it, and my wife enjoyed it as well. So check it out if you're just looking for something to watch. I think it was either 8 or 10
So it's couple-friendly? Episodes.
Yeah.
A good couple show?
Yeah.
Well, you said Lori Petty was involved, right?
Lori Petty's in it.
The Tank Girl?
Does she still look like she's like 85 years old?
Yeah. She's actually supposed to be much older than this.
Well, older than 85?
Well, she was in Orange is the New Black, and she looked very old.
I think I saw a picture of that. She looks about the same as she did in Orange is the New Black. I mean, I say she's supposed to be old. I think she's supposed to be, like, in her 60s in this.
Is that accurate to her
real age? I don't know.
I don't know.
I mean, she looks 60 in the 90s.
I mean, she looked fine in A League of Their Own. I mean, that was in the 80s.
Yeah. Or the 40s, whichever way
you look at it. Or the 40s. That's true. Maybe if it was...
Well, there's a couple shows that apparently you guys got to watch that I wanted to watch but I didn't get to watch, one of which is Reservation Dogs.
Yeah, Karen and I watched about 4 episodes of it. It's on Hulu, and I'd heard a bunch of good things about it. It's actually, the show was created by Taika Waititi. I didn't realize that. And the second season just premiered on Hulu. But it's basically about these 4 like best friends that are all, they're all Native Americans. They live on a reservation, and they're all thieves, and they're just trying to do all kinds of schemes and stuff to get enough money to move off of this reservation because they want to move out to California.
So it's not a sequel to Reservoir Dogs.
It's not a sequel to Reservoir Dogs, but their little gang, I guess, that steals things. There's apparently some other gang that's like trying to mess with them, and the other gang asked somebody what they were called, and he gave him a stupid name first that kind of pissed him off. So he said, "Oh, I told none of the young names of the Reservation Dogs." And one of the kids has got a Reservoir Dogs poster in his room, and
maybe it is sort of it could be in the same universe.
Yeah, probably.
Did they mention Eddie Bunker?
They don't mention
Eddie Bunker. It could be in the same universe.
You never know, man.
He has a Reservoir Dogs poster.
Well, they never explain why they're called the Reservoir Dogs in the movie.
Because they hang out by a reservoir. And
they don't.
They eat kibble.
But yeah, it's a very funny show. They're about 30-minute episodes. One of the main characters, her name is, I can't remember what the last name is, but her first name is Alora Dannon. And as soon as she says that to some guy, he's like from Willow? And then somebody kind of talks about Willow. And in another episode, she yells out, "I'm Alora Dannon." And the guy just refers like, "Yeah, and I'm Mad Mardigan." And I was like, that's awesome.
That's great.
So there's multiple Willow references.
You are great.
Speaking of Taika Waititi, Colin Robinson trying to get into grammar school.
Yes.
What an episode.
I didn't really love that episode.
Oh,
I thought the bit went too long with them trying to with the interview. Other than that, it was funny.
Well, the way that it was cut in between, plus Nandor's
that was hilarious with his face.
His face.
But I just wish that it went a little bit too long, which I know was part of the bit. I just
Is it just me, or just because of the way his accent is, did they pick the perfect name for his soon-to-be wife, Mawa? Like, the way he says it is just like, it's funny. It's like, it's not a real name, and it's just the way he pronounces it is quite hilarious.
I think the genie character is probably one of my favorite additions to the show. And I also love the Night Market episode was really good.
The Night Market episode was very good. I like the Scandinavians. She doesn't understand why they sell both furniture and meatballs.
And for the listeners that may be confused, we switched over to What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
Shawnee!
We did.
Well, which, if you're confused and you don't watch that show, I you know, I'm sorry for you.
Yeah. It's time. We've mentioned it enough. You need to watch that show.
Wait, that's so, okay. In that show, when Shawnee is sitting there and he said, they said, though, you know, Naja and Nandor were the parents. And I'm like, Sean's going to be confused. And sure as shit, he didn't let me down.
I think he's one of the most unsung characters on that show. Like, I love how he's not judgmental.
No.
Like, I love the fact when they sat down and they were trying to describe them. And
we suck and we fuck.
Yeah, and he's like, well, what do you guys are? And was it Guillermo was like, oh, would you call it polyamorous? He's like, oh, I was just going to call them filthy hippies.
Yeah, good times.
But yeah, Colin Robinson's little character is quite funny, though. When he was running around, they were trying to do that interview at the beginning, and he's running around with the weapon, and he's chasing Guillermo, and then he attacks the camera.
I love how they're purposely making the effects kind of terrible on Colin Robinson.
Yeah, but I like that he's growing up quickly, so he'll be Colin Robinson by the end of the season, I'm sure.
One would hope.
And I like the way that that Laszlo had to say, we're doing an interview for the camera.
Oh. But also another show that I didn't get a chance to watch any of these episodes, but you've told me about it and a couple other friends have, The Bear.
I watched one episode. John finished it.
Yeah, it's I was interested in it just because it's got Jeremy Allen White from Shameless that I watched. How many seasons were there of Shameless? It was like 11 or something, or something crazy. And he was always like a standout in that show. And when I was like, oh, good, I'm glad he got his own show. And then I started hearing people talk about it, and I watched it. I mean, it's an awesome show. It's really good. It's, from what I understand, I've honestly never worked in a kitchen, like a restaurant kitchen. I've had my Wendy's job when I was 15, but
don't eat the chili, right?
No, I don't eat the chili.
Did you have to say yes, chef?
No. I didn't.
That's right.
No. And just to clear that up, you don't have to. The chili doesn't have anything like dirty in it or anything, but they just, any burgers that are just like overcooked and dried out, that's what they use to make the chili.
That's why it's so delicious.
I mean, it's not like it's like rotten meat or anything. It's just overcooked and burned meat, basically. Anyway,
that's when it gets the flavor.
Back to the bear. The show is about this guy who's he is a professional chef, and he was working in a restaurant where there was actually named the number one restaurant in the world in one of the food and wine type magazines. And his family has owned this little sandwich shop like his whole life and before he was born. And his brother ran it. And his brother, before the show begins, has committed suicide and left the restaurant, the sandwich shop, to this brother. So he just kind of moves back to Chicago and tries to run this restaurant, this little sandwich shop that is terribly run. And he's trying to implement like ways that they actually run a proper like professional kitchen. And it's all the characters are just, they're all yelling at each other and arguing with each other all the time.
It's like the Wiener Circle.
It's so hectic, but it's great at the same time.
I don't remember if they tell you in the first episode if he committed suicide. I mean, you know he's died. I don't remember.
Did John just say a spoiler?
Well, I'm sure if it's not the first one, it's probably in the second episode. I don't remember them saying that. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But I'll say this. I watched the first episode, and it's very erratic, which, according to my girlfriend, is that's how kitchens...
There's in the seventh episode, which is the second to last one of the season, it's like they're having like a really bad day in the kitchen, and after the 2 minute and like 30 second mark, the rest of the episode is one continuous shot, and it's just all through the kitchen and everybody yelling at each other, and it's like it's really like intense, but I thought it was very good. There's a lot of comic relief in it, even though it's a drama, but there's a lot of like funny stuff that happens in it, and not this isn't funny, but the brother who has committed suicide towards the end of the season, there are some flashbacks, and he's played by John Bernthal.
Oh, well.
And I don't know if it has anything to do with one another, but the guy that played his best friend, who is like the co-restaurant runner or whatever, who gets into it with the main character a lot, is the guy from Punisher that played Micro. It took me a while to realize. I was like, this guy looks really familiar.
He's his
and I
cousin,
looked it up.
Right?
What's he like, the sous chef?
I think it actually says later on they come out that they're not actually even cousins, but they just call each other cousin all the time. Okay. But yeah, I think they were just like him and the brother were best friends.
I gotcha.
And like they grew up together and, you know, kind of like, you know, family. But
okay.
But yeah, I mean, I thought the show was awesome. You could watch the whole thing in 4 hours because I mean, it's only 8 episodes.
And it's on Hulu, like, right?
Hulu, yeah.
Which actually means FX, if you want.
It's at Hulu and FX. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you don't have Hulu, you can find it on FX probably.
Yeah.
Adios, cousin.
Yeah.
Well, you know, speaking of families, The Sandman, after years and years and years of being a comic book, has finally found an adaptation on Netflix. And this premiered this past week. And I am biased because I love Neil Gaiman, and this is one of my favorite comics. So I'm going to let John...
He's a gay man?
His name is Neil Gaiman.
Gay man? That's his name?
G-A-I-M-A-N.
Okay, that's nice. Right.
Or
E-N. It's M-A-N.
M-A-N.
Cool.
So wait,
is this the Spider-Man? Sandman?
No.
No.
Well,
I don't.
I'm just, hey, you said it was a comic book.
So, okay, I'll give you this. So, this comic came about because there's a character from...
I'm an idiot because I...
I'm going to explain it. Like, you don't know.
Sandman. There you go. Glenn's laughing, but I'm being serious.
There was a
Thomas Hayden Church has a new show.
There was an opportunity.
I was about to start watching it today.
In the late '80s, early '90s, that DC wanted to do some characters under like a mature label, and one of the characters that Neil Gaiman wanted to do was the Wesley Dodds Sandman from the Justice Society, which is this guy with this gas mask that you would basically like his weapon was this gas gun that would put you to sleep and all this kind of stuff. Well, they were like, oh, we don't really want to do that. You know, just do your own thing. So he was like, okay, I'm gonna go, you know, crazy horror noir and just go nuts with it. So that's how you get this, you know, idea. He just kind of went, you know, balls to the wall with it and did some crazy concepts. So here comes John.
Well, the only character, Ron, and I'll say this just because, you know, because it is in, what, is it DC?
DC,
it's
yeah.
It's DC Universe. There is a character in it who they've actually changed to a woman in the show, who in the show is Joanna Constantine. And it's that Constantine.
Yeah.
Well, I don't like that they changed it.
I mean, she's a good character. I mean, she's not, honestly, I mean, 7 episodes, and I think she's only been in 2.
I think she's in 3 altogether.
All these people that they've named that are going to be in the show, they've only been in, like, 1 episode, like, each, kind of, because it goes around a lot.
I'll say this about Constantine. Apparently, the phenomenal Keanu Reeves movie that apparently has nothing, like, the real Constantine's not like that, I guess.
Not necessarily. What you should do is, and it should be on HBO Max.
Yeah, I know there's a series, right?
There's a 13-episode series. That guy is... the perfect Constantine.
Yeah, he was good on Legends of Tomorrow.
You're trying to tell me there's someone out there who did something better than Keanu
Reeves?
Look,
Keanu Reeves is fine as the American version of Constantine or Constantine.
Oh, so he's British?
He's British, yeah.
Okay. Is that what Constantine is? Constantine British? Like,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah. And they actually pronounce the same, and they actually pronounce it Constantine.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't like that.
And it's Jenna Coleman who was in, she was in Doctor Who, and she's Victoria.
Victoria.
But,
and she was in one scene in Captain America, the First Avenger.
Yeah.
So where is this Sandman at? The show.
It's on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And all 10 episodes are there. It just, you know, releases all at once. And the Sandman is basically, he's not a god, but he's an otherworldly being who is like, his realm is like the dream realm. And there's all these different realms. One is hell, one is...
So the Endless are basically concepts.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So you have God, you have the devil, and then as these things started to come about... These concepts got like anthropomorphized into like beings.
Is this the guy that Metallica was talking about?
He enters definitely, but
there you go.
It's a whole family of these people called the Endless. So there's like there's Death, there's Despair, Desire, all with D names. Dream, who's also known as Morpheus, and basically where the story opens up, there's a cult in 1916 that's trying to imprison Death because it's World War I's going on, and this guy's law this. Sort of like sorcerer guy has lost his son in the war.
And that guy is played by Charles Dance. Benedict himself.
Oh, so yeah. When he's trying to like capture Death, they apparently get some sigils wrong or something and they accidentally capture Dream instead. So basically they imprison him, they realize what happens, and he's trying to convince him over the course of his life to bring his son back from the dead or talk to his sister and see what he can do. And many, many years pass, you know.
100 years, I say.
Yeah, Charles Dance passes away. His son basically, you know, is there. And he basically, Dream doesn't get out until now. And he's going to, the series in the first season, at the very least, deals with the repercussions of him neglecting his kingdom all this time.
So, as you're describing this, it sounds pretty psychedelic. Is it presented in more of like a practical manner?
Or it's surreal. So, there's a painter, Rene Magritte, who liked to like throw weird things together, like things that like are normal, but there's some kind of weird element to it. Neil Gaiman like suspends disbelief by making it kind of like, yeah, this is just how it is. The characters,
like to play poker.
Yeah, like it's just, yeah, this is how this world is, and you get very steeped in the world very quick, but all the characters are very matter of fact about it.
I think I might have a couple of drinks and watch this tonight.
You totally should.
And then when you finish, watch Constantine.
Gwendolyn Christie.
Or Spider-Man 3.
Gwendolyn Christie, you know, who played Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones. She plays Lucifer.
The big woman?
Yeah. Captain Phasma. Nice.
Captain Phasma, yeah. So David Thewlis is in it.
Oh, he's great.
Yeah.
He's phenomenal
in
this
show,
too.
He's really good in this show, yeah. And the main guy, I don't really recognize him.
He was a stage actor in England. He's won a couple Tonys.
I told Karen, I was like, I feel like he should have been in Twilight, but he wasn't.
Well, I read a review, and it said that his voice is very ASMR.
His voice is really deep, in a very deep sort of. Yeah, his voice looks too deep for his body.
I mean, is Thewlis, is he better than he was in The Big Lebowski? Is Knox Harrington?
No, not at all.
What do you do, Lebowski?
What I find very funny is the first two like collections of the comic, because the comic ran for 75 issues, and the first two collections are kind of what the first season covers, and they did a really good job of like taking the material and converting it in a time frame that's more condensed than you would get like in a comic.
Let me ask you a question.
Let me give you an answer.
Like, let's just say, for argument's sake, like we're talking about this show, The Sandman. Let's just say you're a fan out there, or just some person who watches the show and is interested in the comic book. How could someone just like get this comic, but I have to go to a comic book shop? Can you just download?
You can order. You can download it on Comixology.
You can't really do Audible, I guess, with comics, but like...
What? Funny you should mention that.
Didn't they do an audio?
So, they did an audio play.
Of this
comic on Audible. I actually have the first two volumes.
Have you ever listened to a comic?
I have. It's phenomenal.
Really?
So, in fact, James McAvoy is Morpheus.
Oh, cool.
Interesting.
So it's a really good comparison
the
show.
I'm just saying, like, when we talk about like certain.
To answer your question, go to Amazon, search Sandman. The volumes are numbered. So the first one's Preludes and Nocturnes. The second one's The Doll's House. But you can order that first comic. If you go through it and you don't like it, then don't go on.
Gotcha.
It's 10 volumes.
And I mean, I told my wife about it, and I kind of gave her a brief synopsis of what it was going to be about, and she was like, I don't know if I want to watch that, and she's like, I guess I'll watch the first one with you. When it was over, she's like, you want to watch another one? I'm like, yeah, let's keep going, and she really likes it too. And the cool thing is, I was telling Glenn, it's kind of hard to explain, but like most shows, even though you don't really know exactly what's going to happen, you kind of know where the story's going. I find in this one, each episode, I have no idea what's going to happen next, and it's been awesome.
Yeah, and there's things too, like you have, traditionally on a show, you'll have like a big bad. It's not really that in this. It's like it's more of
it's a situation.
Like basically he's got to reconstruct this whole kingdom. The price of him neglecting this realm is like people have kind of dealt with. There's people who've had like going into comas and not woken up.
Oh,
things like that. So there's all these different repercussions, and all these other characters are moving around.
Is it not kid friendly?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely not. I had at one point.
I only asked because you know I gotta watch when I put stuff on with my kids roaming around.
There's a couple episodes we would probably be fine, but like
there's honestly not really a lot of sex in it. I wouldn't say.
So it's not as bad as The Boys.
No, as bad as The Boys. But there's stuff in it, and there's not a ton of bad language, but some stuff that's violent gets kind of violent.
Okay.
There's a character called the Corinthian who is a nightmare. That his basically like he's like, well, you know, since dreams away, I'm gonna play, and he becomes like he's like a serial killer, and he wears glasses because when he takes them off, his eyes are mouths.
Oh, that's creepy.
Yeah,
and it's Boyd Holbrook plays him. Who's the
so is
guy
it like
from Narcos?
Oh, nice.
So is it like
the original Narcos?
So is he
the blonde guy?
The villain from Logan, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So is he like Freddy Krueger?
That's what it sounds like.
No, not really. Like he's a traditional, like he kills people and takes their eyes, but like he was created as a nightmare. Like Dream writes every dream you have, he's written those stories. And he's one of these nightmares that just got out and is like, no, I like it better in the real world actually doing the stuff. that I was dreamt up to do.
So he's like a dream come to the real world.
Yep.
Yes. It's a very, very cool concept show. Like I've never read the book. I was just fresh into it with this, and I've got 3 episodes left. And
yeah, I do too.
I wish I didn't have to get up early in the morning because I would finish it tonight when I got home. But
yeah, good times. So we talked a little bit before about HBO and the drama that's been happening with the Discovery merger. This all started because the announcement was made with not a lot of context, but that they canceled the Batgirl production. Which it had already been like $90 million.
It was done.
$90 million into it, but so they put it on the shelf.
Why would they do that?
There's a reason.
For money.
But I thought they were finished.
To recoup money.
All right. Well, all right. So they're in a unique situation right now because of this merger. They're able to write off certain amounts of things for tax write offs in relation to this merger.
So they just don't think it's going to make a profit, so they're writing it off.
No.
Okay.
So to their point, they are doing this because it's a good opportunity, but there's another reason for it too. They announced the other day that they have a 10-year plan now for DC that's like the Marvel plan where they have like they know what they're going to do for the next 10 years for the movies.
And it's all cinematic.
And basically, the thing is, originally how Walter Hamada had it was that with the Flash movie, it was going to reset the universe and there'd be new Superman and new, like all this like kind of like a crisis. The president of Warner Discovery,
Zaslav,
he's a fan of he's like, we need to have a plan kind of like Marvel, and it needs to center around Superman. So the Batgirl movie had Michael Keaton's Batman in it because what was supposed to happen at the end of Flash was that continuity got erased and Michael Keaton was this elder statesman Batman would be in all the movies. If you notice, they just announced recently Batfleck is going to be back in Aquaman 2. Originally, it was supposed to be Michael Keaton. So basically, today they announced that basically they're talking about getting Cavill back as Superman.
But then apparently it came out a few minutes ago that Cavill doesn't want to do it.
Oh, that was no.
give him enough money. Sets me.
So yeah, they're kind of restructuring their whole universe.
You're telling
so
me
it's
this,
part
everything
of it.
That's happening right now is because of DC. Like they're canceling.
It's HBO and HBO Max is pretty much going to go away. And they're merging HBO Max and Discovery Plus into one giant streaming service.
Well,
they're reorganizing everything.
But it's still going to be HBO Max, I thought.
No, they're going to retitle it.
But it's going to be the same app, but just a new title.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it may be a completely new app altogether. Like, Discovery Plus and HBO Max are going to go away, and there'll be a new one that comes out.
But they're streamlining, like, the amount of scripted dramas they do, it's not going to be as much. They're scaling a lot of stuff back.
Like 70% of the employees of HBO Max is
so. I mean,
division
and we're worried about Tokyo Vice. Like, we don't know if there's gonna be a second season of that. But the way they worded everything, what they're doing, I'm not sure whether I got that they're not gonna do any more of like the shows that are already there, or if they're just not gonna do any new ones.
A lot of the ones that they announced, a lot of them that got canceled. Tokyo Vice was not on it, but.
Even some TBS and TNT shows.
Yeah, right, like Samantha Bee was one. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff.
AEW, the wrestling thing promotion, like they're in flux because they had a contract originally with TNT, but they moved to TBS. They don't know what's going to happen with them if they're going to cancel them, even though the ratings are pretty good. But no one seems to know what's going to happen.
It almost sounds like all of the scripted stuff is going to go away from HBO Max, and they're going to give it all to the HBO network, and they're going to let the people in charge of HBO decide what they're going to make and what they're not going to make.
So it's like HBO Go? You're going to bring that
back?
No,
it's going to be more like, so whatever this new app is called, Discovery Plus, HBO, whatever they call it, there's going to be a section on it called HBO. When you go to HBO, all the scripted stuff
so
will
be gonna
there.
So it's going
to
be like Peacock, kind of.
Kind
of,
yeah.
Well, we'll see.
But there's a lot of drama.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we don't know where things fall. I know that some of the HBO, regular HBO shows seem to be safe.
Hacks, I would assume, would be a safe. That's been winning.
Well, I think it's more specifically the scripted shows on that are HBO Max only.
Originals.
Yeah,
right.
Like the ones that are just HBO shows.
But Hacks, I think, is HBO Max exclusive.
Was it?
So is The Flight Attendant.
Yeah, Flight Attendant.
The Flight Attendant was over anyway.
Oh, is it? Okay.
I saw the news today that Kaley Cuoco just signed up to be the lead in another show that it's going to be on Peacock that's... It said it was like a comedy, what I described the flight attendant as. It was like comedy.
It's a dramedy, kind of.
Yeah, like a. I can't remember the way they worded it, but it sounded like that kind of like suspense kind of comedy.
Which she's good at.
Yeah.
But yeah, that the what was it? Love Life was another HBO Max, and then was it Doom Patrol? And they, like, all the DC stuff, they just want it to be in theaters now. And I will say Batgirl was always intended to be an HBO Max movie as well. But Brendan Fraser was supposed to be the villain. He was going to be the Firefly.
Yeah, a lot of the images are coming out from it now. Because they showed him as Firefly. They have Michael Keaton on the roof in the Batman suit.
Yeah, the two directors, they're the ones that did Bad Boys for Life, and they did a bunch of episodes of Ms. Marvel.
I don't understand if the film is done. Why wouldn't you just put it out on HBO?
Well, they're also trying to they want to have everything just cinematic. They want to save some money, and it's going to cost like $30 million to promote it, or they can just not put it out and just have a $90 million tax write off.
But
also it would confuse. They're saying they want to streamline the messaging as far as, because if you notice, they like all of the DC CW shows, those are all getting canceled too, except for the Superman one. So it they're basically scaling things back to get one vision presented of what their DC characters are like.
Do you think this is a good idea?
I kind of think it has to be. Because the thing is, my big concern is like getting rid of the Snyderverse. They've already done some of it. Some of it worked, some of it didn't. But the fact is, if you're moving on with another Shazam movie, another Aquaman movie, there should be another Wonder Woman. Those characters, I mean, okay, lean into those and then build stuff around the others. Break off some of that, Water Tower money and give it to Cavill to get back.
Superman and Batman origin story. That's for what
we totally. Really need. We need three of those, and another Spider-Man one too.
Mm-hmm.
But I finally, so I got to take my mother and my father to go see Elvis.
I still haven't seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
Oh.
I already know what you're gonna say.
Do you?
Yeah, you loved it.
I fucking loved it. Yeah. Heather was kind of on the fence about it. She's a massive Elvis fan.
Why would she be on the fence then?
Because she did, like, she's like, the guy, I don't know. She was worried they're gonna mess it. He was gonna mess it up. He wasn't gonna do good, and she hadn't seen him in anything else.
Did she listen to the Village?
Hold on.
And did she watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood as his text?
he was
on a horsey.
So like, she was working one day, and I was off, and I was like, my mom had just gotten back from a vacation, and I was like, want to go to see a movie? She's like, oh sure, yeah. Happened to be that it was raining that day, so my dad was also off. So he's like, you mind if I come? I'm like, not at all. So we go to the theater to watch this movie, and I'm bracing for a 2.5-hour movie. You guys had said it was good. So I'm like, oh, this is going to be a really good movie. I wasn't prepared for just how good of a movie this was going to be. Baz Luhrmann really is at the peak of his craft. And this actor...
Austin Butler.
The name was coming to me, but I can't say enough. I've watched interviews now with him since then about how committed he was to this role.
Yeah, he had to be.
The physicality of the role, as well as like him actually singing the songs in the movie. I've now watched videos like with Elvis's performance compared to his.
I've done that same.
Striking.
It's crazy how good this is. And it doesn't, there's parts of it that are dramatized. And what I love about it is, since it's told from the point of view of his manager, he's an unreliable narrator, so there's those parts that are dramatized are just kind of his take on things. But yeah, the Colonel was a fuckface.
Santa Claus is coming to town.
And I've actually heard, like, the actual real Colonel did speak with more of a Southern accent, not the pseudo-Dutch accent they give him in this.
Well, that's where he's from. Isn't he from? Yeah. Isn't he originally from the Netherlands?
It's a fascinating story. There were aspects of Elvis's life that I didn't know about. Like, I knew about his love for his mom. I didn't realize his mom died when he went to basic training.
I don't know.
And they really follow, like, the tragedy of Elvis's life is that, his relationship with this father figure of his probably did him in. And because the guy couldn't leave the country, Elvis, I didn't realize Elvis never left the U.S.
Except when he was in the army.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
Never did a world tour. He kept wanting to do a world tour. They offered him tons of money. And his manager turned it down, all because he didn't have a passport and couldn't leave the country.
I won't spoil the rest of it for John if he doesn't know the story.
Oh, okay.
Because you're right. I didn't know a lot of the details of Elvis's business, like, dealings with the Colonel and, his performances and why he... I mean, he was in Vegas for the whole end of his career.
And what's funny is Baz Luhrmann is kind of like a lot of directors. He has his usual suspects that are in his movies.
Yeah.
Like David Wenham's in it. At the beginning, this was an incredibly well cast film, and it's a phenomenally acted film. Like, I can't say enough about Austin Butler.
Did you find that other than the very beginning that Baz Luhrmann kind of, I took his foot off the gas pedal a little and kind of, I don't know, it wasn't as Baz Luhrmann-ish as like...
This reminds me, okay, The Inside Man.
Uh-huh.
It's very clearly an accomplished director, and there are nods where you know that it's Spike Lee, but it feels...
It didn't feel like a Spike Lee.
Feel like, this is that same
like
way.
Like the beginning of it
I know it's a Baz Luhrmann film.
And the beginning of it was very Baz Luhrmann, mm-hmm. but it wasn't like Great Gatsby where it was...
Now, one of the other things that I really loved, and Ryan may have mentioned this, but the fact that through it all, they address his appropriation of you know, black music.
Yeah.
But I love that they play Elvis songs that are sort of done in a hip-hop way in the background. This is an amazing movie. And when I got home and Heather was like, well, how was it? And I just gushed over it. She's like, well, now I got to watch it. And I'm like, well, it comes out August 9th, and I'll buy it on demand and we'll watch it.
Actually, well, you know what? I think it was supposed to come out on HBO Max, and I think they delayed it.
Because they want to see if the HBO Max is still around, I guess.
But yeah, I'd give this a 9. I really, really love this movie. And a movie that I have a feeling that I would really like is The League of Super Pets. And I can't wait to hear about this.
Yeah, I took my kids to go see it. John, I think you went and saw it.
Yep. I took my little girl to see it. Yep. She loved it.
It's, you know, The Rock, Kevin Hart, the great comedy duo of our generation. Animated Super Pets. So the start of the movie
If they would do a reboot of Twins.
There you go. Yeah, definitely them two. But it starts with the origin story of Superman. He's, you know, the planet's breaking down, except the only difference is right before his little ship takes off, his little puppy dog Krypto jumps into the little pod with him and heads to Earth. Except when they get to Earth, Krypto also has the powers of Superman. So he's sort of like known in the pet world as that Superman dog who can do all these different powers. And, basically it's just about how... first of all, I didn't realize there were going to be so many DC characters in it, like the entire Justice League. Lex Luthor is, like, the main villain, sort of. Well, not the main villain, but...
And he's voiced by Mark Maron.
And basically the story goes is that, of course, they're trying to figure out a way to take away Superman's power with kryptonite, and Luthor finds this, like, orange kryptonite that's going to be coming in close to the solar system. He can pull it in, and he thinks that's going to like give him superpowers. Turns out, as Luthor was like running pet experiments, one of his pets made him think that it was going to give him superpowers. Turns out it was going to give the pets superpowers. So this pet sort of fools Luthor into bringing in this kryptonite. And
it's a guinea pig named Lulu.
Yeah, and she gets superpowers to become this supervillain, to become teaming with Lex Luthor.
And Kate McKinnon voices her.
And problem is that when the kryptonite comes down, she's like at a pet shelter, and all the other pets that are in the room with her get superpowers as well. And there's an old woman turtle who can't see for shit.
And, voiced by Natasha Lyonne.
And even after she gets superpowers, which she's like the Flash running fast, she still can't see for shit, so she keeps running into things. And she curses constantly, so they keep having to beep her out.
They beep out all kind of stuff. Oh, no. Like, at one point, she just takes off running and just all of a sudden she's like, where the fuck am I?
Yeah.
And she's a turtle?
Yeah.
When she bumps into things, does it make sounds like a pinball machine?
I don't remember.
I don't remember whether they did it or not.
But, yeah, so...
If not, it seems like a missed opportunity.
It does.
So, yeah, Kevin Hart is plays like, I don't know, it's like a boxer.
Yeah.
And he's like indestructible.
Like the dog, not like an actual, like, fight. Not like a Mike Tyson boxer.
No.
Play it to the bone.
Yeah, Superman and Krypto lose their power because of Lulu's master plan, and it's just about how the pets have to all come together to save the world. And it's a very funny movie, but I will tell you, I had to talk to John about one of the most disturbing and sad backstories.
And I don't. We can say that because I mean this isn't really like a spoiler of the movie, but it's
no. So the backstory of Kevin Hart's character,
and it's a boxer. Right?
He's a boxer, and what was so horrible about it was so believable and realistic. So he apparently tells Krypto this story that he used to have a family, but he doesn't have a family anymore. So what happened was he was owned by this couple. The couple had a baby. And, you know, they showed, you know, the baby playing with the boxer, and everybody's all happy. And one day these awful parents leave the room, and they don't pay attention to the fact that the gate to the stairwell is open. So the baby walks out and is wandering down the stairwell and is about to go tumbling down the stairs. Well, the boxer sees this and is looking around, and there's no adults around, so the dog runs over there and grabs the baby by the arm and pulls the baby back, but the only way he can do that is by biting the baby.
Because dogs don't have thumbs.
So when he does this, the parents show up and the baby's crying and has a big bite mark on her arm. So they take the dog to the pound and leave him there. And that was sad enough, but the worst part afterwards was when it flashes to current time and he's telling the story to Crypto. Crypto's like, man, this is, I'm sorry this happened to you. And he's like, oh, well, I would have done it again. And he's like, why? You lost everything. You lost your family. And he's like, well, I love them. And sometimes when you love something so much, you got to be willing to let it go. And I was just like, wait, yeah. What the?
It was heavy.
What the hell? I was like on the verge of tears. And like 2 seconds ago, I was laughing my ass off.
Ryan's the old softy.
It came out of nowhere. Yeah. And I'm telling you, y'all are going to be thanking me because you won't be as hit by it because I gave you a warning. But it was sad. Like, that was a really sad part. But overall, it was actually a very enjoyable film.
Yeah. A lot of funny stuff.
My kids liked it a lot.
And there's a lot of stuff in it that, not that they're really adult jokes, but, like, there's a lot of stuff in it that, like, went right over my daughter's head. But I thought it was funny. One of the, just the little throwaway jokes that made me crack up for some reason was Lex Luthor, you know, he captures all the, you know, the Justice League as they would, various different ways. But the way he captures Cyborg is he puts him on airplane mode, and I was just like, that's kind of funny. So
yeah, I'll probably give it about like a 7.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'd give it. 7.
Nope. Who watched Nope now? Ryan watched Nope with Luann.
Not since we recorded though.
You watched what? Nope. You watched Nope now.
Last time we recorded, I was the only one that had seen it.
Really?
Yeah.
I wasn't prepared to talk about this. I really thought I had talked about it the last time.
Why? Didn't you put it in the message?
No, John did. Because I talked to John about it because I called him. Okay. Well, that's cool. I'm happy to talk about
it. You and Lou saw it, didn't you?
Here's the thing.
Tell me the thing, Ryan.
I mean, John went through what it's about and everything. But Jordan Peele's greatest asset to me is the fact that after his movies are over, you're left with questions and you're left talking about them. And I think in a good way. Like, I didn't leave the film unsatisfied, but I will say this was probably, I wouldn't say my least favorite, but the more I thought about it, like, this movie stayed with me for a couple of days. I was thinking about it, trying to figure out a lot of stuff. And I read some articles and stuff, and it's not like I needed it explained exactly. I just wanted to some other points of view of what I saw. And it was different, you know, in an age where all you see is fucking dinosaurs and superheroes. It's nice to be able to go to a summer movie and see something completely original.
Fucking dinosaurs?
Yeah, dinosaurs.
That fuck?
I mean, me and Glenn had a great time. I mean, I'll go see Dominion with him again.
Let's do it. I want to see that one, the Freddy Krueger one, slap that deer again.
Hey, Glenn. Dotson. But
I still don't know if that thing could see or not.
Yeah. I just love the way it bitch slapped that deer.
But, yeah, so I know a lot of people are, with Nope, at least the thing that my first big question after the movie was over was, what was the deal with this monkey storyline? And it just has to deal with...
Y'all haven't seen the movie, have you?
I'm not going to go into spoilers about it, but there's a storyline involving a monkey. And
who goes bananas?
The thing about it, though, it's a backstory to a character, and it's presented like it's really important, but it's only for a supporting character who's not really in the movie very much. So that kind of like threw me a little bit, where I was thinking it had something more to do with the actual plot involving the alien, and it doesn't exactly. It's more about the premise of what about animals and stuff. And give it some time, you know. Don't don't be too judgmental with the thing, because the more I thought about it and talked to John about it, like it made sense the way Jordan Peele did it, and it was done in a very original way. Interesting though, did you know that he tweeted like 8 years ago that he had a nightmare about a monkey that went ballistic and killed some people and then came to him for a hug?
Wow.
And then his last was hashtag bra after that. That's how he tweeted it, which I found rather interesting. But yeah, Jordan Peele is a fantastic director. I mean, look, me and my sister had many times this movie, we were just like floored. We were like, what the hell is going on? But like, we were engaged in the movie. I would probably give it like a 7.7, 7.8. It wasn't as good as Get Out. It was right on par with Us, I think.
I liked it a little better than Us, but not as much as Get Out.
Yeah, I could go with that.
I really liked Us a lot.
I mean, I liked
Us. I didn't like the end of Us, but other than that, I
would never like the end of Us, Ryan.
I enjoyed Us when I saw it, but then the more I thought about it, kind of the less I liked it, the more
I will
thought
always
of it.
Enjoy Us, Glenn.
Oh. Jesus.
I should say the motion picture Us.
This is Us.
Oh, we don't watch that.
Why do people do that to themselves?
I don't know.
Here we are.
Let's watch the show and cry every week.
Well, we only have one life, but Glenn saw 13, apparently.
I did.
So, unfortunately, Glenn just watched this...
Last night.
And so, I didn't have time to watch
it. It's fresh in the brain.
I didn't realize, like, this is a major...
It's a major motion
I'm looking
picture.
Over your shoulder at the actors that are in this, and I want to watch it now.
Look who directed it.
Who directed that? Ron Howard!
It's a major award.
It's a major motion picture. Like,
little Opie Cunningham himself.
Did ILM do the special effects?
I'm sure they did.
Ron Howard doesn't work with anybody else, just like Spielberg.
Ain't no motion picture. No, so yeah, the 13 Lives, this premiered on Amazon this weekend. So me and Sandra watched it last night because I'd been hearing stuff about it. I was very interested in the story, and I wanted to tell you guys about it. So we watched it. So 13 Lives, this is a Ron Howard film, and... It tells the story, which I kind of remember when this was in the news back in 2018 in Thailand. This kind of a little league soccer team was they were practicing, and one of the younger members, it was his birthday, and before the parents had their little birthday party for him, the soccer coach wanted to take the kids on like a little field trip, I guess, to these underground caves in Thailand. And it's kind of a it's a religious thing where there's this deity that it's the Sleeping Princess is what they call her, and it's kind of this folk tale involving these caves. So the kids they ride their bikes and they're going through these underground caves, and monsoon season there wasn't supposed to start for a number of weeks, and something happened where there was something with the wind where monsoon season ended up starting early, and when the kids were in these caves, this massive torrential downpour started, and the caves flooded very quickly. And at first, no one really knows where the kids went. And eventually, one of the people on the team that couldn't make it said, well, I know they were going to those caves. And when they went there, they found all their bikes, and the caves were completely underwater. So the government, they called in the Thai Navy SEALs who try to dive down there to go look to see if the kids are even still alive, and they get not very far, and they have to turn back because they're all bloodied and beaten up and stuff like this. So the story goes out, and two British volunteers who are specialized in underwater cave rescues, named Rick Stanton and John Volton, who are played by Viggo Mortensen and Colin Farrell, they hear about this story and immediately say, we need to go and help these kids. So they fly to Thailand, and they set up Colin Farrell's character, John. He has a little boy. Viggo Mortensen's character, Rick, he's kind of a loner. One of them, I want to say, is a former firefighter, and the other one's like a retired teacher. And they just do this. They volunteer. So they go out, and they kind of con their way, saying, oh, the governor said we can go in because we specialize in this. And when they go down, it's like the worst conditions that they've ever seen. And eventually they go through. And after diving through these caves for upwards of 7 hours, they find all the kids and the coach, they're all alive. And they've been down there for a number of days. And then the movie's about, pretty much the first act of the movie. Then it's kind of, they have to figure out, how do we get these kids out? Because monsoon season doesn't stop for 3 months. These caves probably aren't going to drain for a number of months. And they got some people that are come in because the caves are flooding so fast because of all these sinkholes. So they got people trying to divert water. They're, they call in some of their fellow divers to try to figure out, what to do. How do we get these kids out alive? Because it's a 7-hour dive through these caves, and this movie is amazing. But I will put an asterisk next to this. if you are at all claustrophobic, this movie will freak you the hell out.
That's why I didn't watch it last time. When you texted me that, I was actually going to watch it. I'm like, no.
You don't think you can handle it in your house? I mean, I know when we saw The Descent, we were in a theater, and that was...
The way that Ron Howard shoots this, it's incredible. Just, I mean, imagine some of those scenes in The Descent, which is a movie about these women that go spelunking, where they have to, you know, maneuver their bodies through these small spaces and stuff like that. But imagine that being underwater with scuba gear. I mean, it's unbelievable that... this is a true story. It's unbelievable that this happened. And, you know, eventually, I'm not going to give out any spoilers, even though this really happened, but their ultimate solution, I can't believe they were able to do what they did. I love that Ron Howard did this because, in a strange way, it reminded me a little bit of Apollo 13 because it's about something that goes very wrong, and the main story is all the people trying to work together to figure out how to fix it. But he directs the hell out of this movie, and from what I understand, Viggo Mortensen and Colin Farrell, and I think it was Viggo Mortensen's idea, he didn't want to use stunt doubles. He says, we need to do this ourselves. So, and apparently they both, like, freaked out because of everything with the outfits on them. However, they set up these underwater caves. It was just, it's amazing that what they accomplished with this film. I wish it would have been in theaters, but it's on Amazon right now. It's about 2.5 hours, but it's very intense, and I can't say enough good things. I think I would probably give this about an 8.9. It was great.
Nice.
I would give it a 13, but I'm
not. They, them.
All right, so I saw a trailer.
Brian just dropped his pen.
Yeah, I did. I saw a trailer for this, I don't know, it was like a month or 2 months ago, and I was immediately intrigued because I love Kevin Bacon.
Who doesn't?
Exactly. So guess who else is in this? Anna Chlumsky.
No way!
Good old my girl, yeah.
She was good in Veep.
You know, I guess you'd say, what can make us feel this way? She was in that Inventing Anna movie, too, or Anna or whatever. I haven't had to watch it, but yeah.
So They, Them is about this group of kids who are sent to a gay conversion camp. Basically, it's out in the woods. And Kevin Bacon, and he's got, like, his wife and two other assistants, and Anna Chlumsky is, like, the medic, is the medical personnel to oversee the whole area. And, yeah, these kids have basically been sent there by their parents for various reasons, and while they're there, people start getting killed. And so here's the thing about this. Is it a perfect film? Is it a flawless suspense film? Is it a great horror film? I would say no to all of that.
Is it a good movie?
But at the same time, like, I was intrigued and really enjoying the fact that they were giving me something different. Like, in this genre, you know, LGBTQ characters are sort of like, you know, stereotyped, cast off, like, you know, ridiculous, put off to the side. Where in this film, they're all put front and center. And all the different kids, like, I liked how they all have their own, you know, they're at their own stage of identification or understanding who they are. You have, like, some gay guys who totally are comfortable with the fact that they're gay. They know who they are. One older, like, teen guy is, like, you know, he's about to go to college. His dad's expecting him to pledge in a fraternity, and he doesn't want to be gay. He really wants to be converted. And then you have transgender individuals who are, you know, the campers are having trouble identifying, you know, are you supposed to be in the boy group? Are you supposed to be in the girl group? And Kevin Bacon's performance, I find, is amazing. Like, when he gives his whole little welcome speech, it's like you're kind of lured in thinking, This isn't going to be like what you think it is a gay conversion camp. Sounds like this could be fun, because he basically talks about how, look, if we're not homophobic, if that's who you are, great. We're not about changing you. We want you to be happy with yourself. And so if you're here and you don't want to take part in everything, you know, just get a great tan while you're here. Enjoy yourself and everything. But things really go off the rail, you know, pretty quickly, and you realize that there's some twisted methods going on here. So the interesting part to me was that the whole murder aspect of it, is really not played up too much until like the last 20 to 30 minutes of the movie. Everything else is about the psychological effects and difficulties that these kids have to go through. I really enjoyed this film. And I really want you guys to see it because it is getting blasted by critics and fans.
I looked on like IMDb. I just kind of looked at it, like the fan reviews, and it was like all like ones out of 10. But I mean, I don't know if that's just, you know, the people that get on there that haven't seen the movie. And
I mean, look, it's not a great film by any means, but I kind of equate it. Remember that Johnny Depp film, Nick of Time?
Yeah.
Like, that's not really a great film, but I appreciated the fact that they tried something different.
You almost can admire it more than you enjoy the movie.
Yeah, like, I would watch that movie again just because they... And you know what? I don't know if that movie, like, mattered to a lot of filmmakers, but I noticed that, like, after that, you saw a lot of movies utilizing real-time, like, aspects in their film. I mean, in Titanic, from the point when the ship hits the iceberg, it kind of goes through real-time from then on out. So, well, I mean...
You had an entire TV series
and
called 24.
24, all that came after... Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying Nick of Time was some pioneering film. I'm simply saying I don't remember any of that shit before that movie came out. So, like, if this movie, like, incorporates LGBTQ characters more in, like, this type of genre, I think it opens up a whole different, like some really interesting possibilities of what they could do with those characters in this type of environment. I really liked it. I would probably... I'm not going to give it, like, a glowing, like, 10 or anything. I'd probably give it, like, a 6.5. It was way better than I thought because, like John said, I went to the reviews too, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be terrible, but it's Kevin Bacon. I had to go watch it for Kevin Bacon, and he's really good in this. He looks fantastic. That dude's aging like a beast, and I think y'all should check it out. It's only like an hour and 40 minutes.
Isn't his wife Arlene from True Blood?
Yes. Awesome. No, I'm sorry. She's in it, but she's not. She's one of the other counselors. Uh-huh. I want y'all to check it out. It's only like an hour and 40 minutes.
Where can I see this?
It's on Peacock.
Oh. Well, speaking of sort of horror movies, Prey, a movie about the predators.
You can't eat or love anything.
Let me just preface this. Like, so the last one was The Predator, right?
I never saw that one.
John did.
I didn't
the
either.
The one with Boyd Holbrook was in it.
Yeah, you saw it. Yeah. You know about the glove or the claw or some shit.
Yeah.
Was it Shane Black that needed?
Shane Black did.
And you said it was pretty good.
It was pretty good.
But I had seen trailers for it for a while before it came out. So this Prey movie, I hadn't even heard about it really. And all of a sudden I saw, oh look, like there's a Predator movie coming out. And it was like 2 days later it was coming out. It was like out. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be terrible. Like I didn't even really hear much about it. So yeah, I said, well, it's Predator. I love Predator. And it's about Native Americans. I was like, what the hell are they trying to do here?
You one ugly motherfucker.
I wasn't expecting this. This is really
This is a really, really good movie.
I mean, it was way better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, the trailer looked interesting, and I kind of, I didn't really know what to expect. Kind of took me by surprise that this movie was coming out, but I'm like, let's give it a chance. But even from like the opening shot, like first of all, it's shot beautifully.
Yeah,
directed by Dan Trachtenberg, who did 10 Cloverfield Lane,
and that girl is gorgeous.
She really is.
Oh my god, she's like hypnotic.
She was in that movie that I don't know if anybody else watched it. That one with Liam Neeson that was called The Ice Road. Where he was like the ice road trucker guy.
Oh,
yeah. I think you and I watched it.
Apparently she was in Hell or High Water. Because
we kept making fun of it.
It wasn't good.
No, it got progressively more stupid as we watched it.
She was the other like driver that it looked like she'd been in some trouble with the law in the past and all stuff, but she was like the only one you could trust. And
Yeah, she was in Hell or High Water, apparently.
Hmm.
But yeah, this movie, all right, so if you're not familiar, it takes place 300 years before the first Predator.
1719, I think.
Right, and... I mean, it's about a predator that gets dropped off on Earth in the middle of the Comanche Nation. And
so that he can walk around and predit.
And it's about some Comanche by the name of Naru, played by her name is Amber Midthunder. And her and her brother pretty much take on this predator.
Yeah.
And there's some French fur trappers in there. Which have some Easter eggs to another Predator film that I don't want to remember.
Which is not as good, but... I love how they incorporate.
I like that a lot.
It was kind of funny to me because like at one point like early on in the movie there wasn't a whole lot of characters in it, and the few characters that it seemed to me like they were maybe kind of expendable were relatively soon on, and I was like, oh, what's, we still got a lot of movie left, and I don't know what, is she just going to be going back and forth with this thing? And then all of a sudden, this group of 30 French fur traders show up, like, oh, yeah, here we go.
First of all, I got to give props to the director, because I feel like this is a guy who I don't think was like, I want to make some money off of a Predator movie. I think this is a guy you could tell legitimately, like, is a fan. Because I love the way they designed this particular Predator, where if you looked at the one from the original compared to this one, it looked like, technology-wise, this is what they would he would change to. And I remember, like, watching the movie, I'm like, why doesn't he just use his fucking laser? And then when he uses it, he does, but it's not what you think.
All right.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, that's really kind of clever.
Yeah.
Because it's 300 years before right. for them,
like,
too.
I kind of like that. I was blown away. I really wasn't expecting it to be this good.
No, I'm with you. I really, really like this movie.
The dog was good in it, too.
Yeah.
Well, and it doesn't overstay its welcome. It's an hour and a half. It has a lot of character development packed into that hour and a half.
And you know what else I liked about the characters? They weren't stupid. Like, they weren't dying for stupid reasons.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is kind of like the original Predator. Like, they were there to do a mission, and they just encountered this thing, and they were just trying to, like, that's what I loved about when you get into these horror films or sci-fi, and it's like, why are these characters doing such stupid things?
Well, I hear, like, I missed the post-credit scene. I didn't watch it.
Oh, there's a post-credit scene?
Well, I just know there's, like, cave paintings or draw, like, during the credits, and I think one of them is a little animated.
Well, no, the scene that I heard is that it's, at the end of it, there's a thing that happens over the top of the Comanche Nation, which might explain how we get that certain item back on for the other movie.
I think that this is maybe something that, you know, they'll revisit, like,
that
the Predator could come back at different
Predators in time. Yeah. That I love the concept.
Right,
Let's do it.
I think that's something that could be
Can you imagine the samurai versus a Predator?
Yeah,
they can't, because this is the first Predator.
But, like, what about something like, you know, like some kind of special forces troop in World War II or something? You know what I mean? Like, just, I think there's a lot of different possibilities they could do with it that I find way more interesting than what they were doing with, you know, Alien versus Predator and all that other bullshit.
Whoever wins, we lose.
I mean,
well, I think kind of the cool concept too is, like, nowadays we have all this, like, this technology that would, you know, help us to combat the Predator. I like the idea that this was, like, bow and arrow with a slightly more technologically advanced, you know, it was really cool. There was a lot of good tension because of it.
Yeah, and I mean, Predator is my favorite Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, because that's...
Really?
It was, when I was a young kid, lies. It was, I mean, I was a fan, I became a fan of Conan. That was the first one I saw. My dad showed me that. Then the Terminator came out, and Predator to me was, when I was growing up, it was like, I guess maybe it sort of tied to memories with my dad, but that was like Arnold when he was getting to his peak, starting to become like the biggest movie star at the time. And that special effects at the time was stuff that people had never seen before. I feel like this movie played a lot of respect to the original Predator. And I mean, to a lot of respects, Predator 2, even though I wasn't the biggest fan of it, it did, like, I love, even if you didn't like it, like, I love the fact that they didn't ignore that it existed. And they incorporated all of that elements into the film.
That's a real bad habit you got there.
By the way, I watched the original Predator the other day, and I watched it with subtitles on. Now I know the lyrics to Long Tail Sally, and I didn't. That's a very sexual song. I didn't realize that. She's got what Uncle John needs.
Oh, there you go.
I would give this movie like an 8.5. Like a sci-fi action.
I was going 8.25.
I was going to go 8.
8.
Good to know.
Yeah, it's definitely the best of... I never did see either of the Alien versus Predator.
They're not good.
But yes, that's what I've heard.
I watched most of the first one. It was terrible.
They're not good.
I never watched
it. But I mean, I saw Predator 2. Wasn't very good. I saw Predators, which...
That was okay.
It was all right, but I mean, it wasn't that great.
That was fun.
The last one with Boyd Holbrook was decent, but I mean, I think... I don't remember what I gave it, but I mean, it'd probably be like a 7, maybe.
You know what's kind of ironic is after... a lot of the Predator movies are on Peacock, but not the Predator. Because I wanted to watch that one, because I remember, like, John said it wasn't that bad, so I wanted to check it out. But that one's not there. Predator 2 and Predators are there.
Well, I did not get to make it to the Cineplex to see Bullet Train, but you gentlemen did.
Did you guys see
it? Yep, me and John saw
it.
I can't wait to hear about this. I didn't get to see it either.
So, this is a new Brad Pitt movie. he plays a character that's just called Ladybug.
Really?
It's a code name.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone in this movie has code names. And kind of the interesting way that it's directed, like when the character's introduced, the screen kind of freezes and their name comes up.
Okay.
So his handler calls him Ladybug.
And this is a new code name apparently, because when it first starts, he's talking about how he's ready to get back to work because he's had a string of really bad luck, and she calls him Ladybug, and apparently Ladybug's supposed to be very lucky.
Yeah, and then he's feeling it because he's like a thief. He's not like an assassin, which right. The trailers kind of make it look like. He's a thief that's sent there because the normal person that his handler would use called in sick.
Yeah.
So Ladybug sent on this bullet train in Japan to get this briefcase and get off. It's a bullet train. It stops so many times. There's a 1 minute stop every few minutes. He needs to get the case and get off as fast as he can. But when he gets on the train, there's quite a few people on this train that all kind of want the same thing. We meet Joey King plays a character called Prince. Aaron Taylor Johnson and Brian Tyree Henry play
Tangerine and Lemon.
Tangerine and Lemon, who are also called the twins. Which, yeah. But if you see them, they're not twins. Andrew Koji, we actually know his name.
Yeah, he's got a name.
It's Cut Kimura. Which he's on. Should we say why he's on there? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it starts out in the beginning. He's like a father that's in the hospital with his son, and his son is in critical condition because he just had an accident where someone has pushed his son off the roof of a building. And the son is alive, but he's not well.
And it seems like his father, Andrew Koji's character's father, is a Yakuza.
Yeah.
And
kind of blames him for not taking care of his son. So he basically goes on this train because he hears maybe the person that did this is on this train, and he's going to go try to find this person and kill
right.
him.
Right. And the musician Bad Bunny, he's on there. He plays Wolf. A lot of people are talking about a villain named White Death that everyone seems to be afraid of. And then there's a assassin that's kind of specializes in poisoning people.
The Hornet?
Called the Hornet.
The Hornet, yeah.
And they're all on this train, kind of all wanting the same thing. And Brad Pitt's character, Ladybug, again, he's convinced that he's just a jinx and he's bad luck. And he's just kind of weighing over his head.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I will say, I didn't think it kind of lived up to the trailer, because the trailer was amazing for this. And this movie, while it's a lot of fun, I don't think it quite lived up to the craziness that the trailer had presented. But
it was a lot of fun.
It's fun. Brad Pitt, he kind of is playing, I think it's almost like a variation on the character he played in The Mexican a little bit. He's good.
Because he's kind of a goofball a little bit, but he also, you can tell, he can handle himself very well.
He's good at his job, but he's still kind of a goofball.
Yeah. So here's what I can tell you, what I expected from the trailers. I expected fast-paced, in a movie that's like an hour and 40 minutes.
It's not as fast-paced as I thought it would
it's,
be.
It's, really? It's relatively fast. It's not maybe not as fast as much as the trailer, and it's like just a shade under 2 hours.
Okay.
So I mean, it's not much longer than that, but
the characters presented, they're all pretty entertaining. Me and John talked about this. I think Andrew Koji was kind of miscast.
Yeah.
And
he didn't do a bad job.
He wasn't, no. He was fine.
I mean, after seeing him as, like, Storm Shadow or something, it's like, he could have been, like, one of these crazy, awesome assassin type
people. And he was just kind of sad throughout the whole movie.
Well, look, I really want to see this movie. And the main reason is the same reason, like, I keep telling people to go see Elvis, go see Nope. I just want original shit. Like, I'm tired of sequels. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, no, and again, this is a lot of fun. Kind of the movie I would compare this to is Smokin' Aces.
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Oh. It's pretty good.
I mean, I've heard you guys talk about it.
One of the main
it.
Characters is Ryan Reynolds, so you probably just hate him before you start watching it.
Oh, fuck that.
But it's got a lot of characters in it.
Besides that, what other movie could it be?
Without
the worst person in the world.
But Bullet Train, it's a lot of fun. There are a lot of fun cameos in it that I'm not going to give away.
Should we tell them who the White Death is?
No, because I wasn't sure. Maybe after we record.
I did hear there's like a lot of cameos, though.
Yeah.
But there's this whole backstory about White Death is this crazy Russian that kills all these people with their own weapons, and it's a very, I mean, the characters are written very well, and it's very inventive.
Yeah. It's not like a, we're not going to say who it is on the air, but it, when I say that, it's not like a, oh my God, it's that, it's not like a crazy character that turns out to be yeah. Spy Death. It's just the actor. That's the
yeah. And I mean, it's no one like, yeah. oh my God, they, it's not like George Clooney shows up. It's just yeah, somebody right, that shows right. up and you're like, oh, that's interesting.
But yeah, yeah, and you just kind of find out gradually as it's going along why all these characters are kind of linked together.
And yeah. And what the, what they're yeah. all kind of after for, yeah. for what reasons. And it's a fun little film.
Yeah.
Again, it's not going to, I don't think it's gonna break the bank or anything.
Yeah.
But it's fun. It's a good
it's
time.
It's fun, and I feel like it's one of those that's like when I'm at home, if I'm like doing stuff around the house and I see that's on HBO, I'll put it on.
Yeah, yeah. Because
it's just it's fun.
I'd probably give it
7.
I was gonna say 6.5, but maybe a little over 6.5, 6.75.
All right. So, yeah.
All right. Well, we actually had a couple people pass away that we wanted to remember today. One of them, like just right before we came to record,
she's the one that I want.
Oh. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Ooh, ooh,
ooh. Let's get physical.
So Olivia Newton-John passed away. You know, star of Grease.
If you want to like upset yourself, go read what John Travolta tweeted about her. It's pretty upsetting.
Did he call her Delta Z?
He just said it was something to the effect that like you know, like he basically said something like you know, well, I loved you the moment I saw you. We were, you know, we'll see each other again. And we'll all be together one day. And he's like, forever yours. Love Danny. Love John.
It was very sweet.
Yeah.
Okay. Does Xenu allow people to meet again in the afterlife?
I'm not positive. I don't know. It seems like John Travolta might be distancing himself from that a little.
I think, I mean, if you watch Going Clear, I think it's pretty well established. Travolta is a prisoner of his homosexuality that he...
Allegedly. We're not looking to get sued, Scientology.
Well, I mean, we wouldn't, Ryan.
Scientology! Don't sing it, just bring it. I ain't afraid of them.
Really?
Not.
They disappeared Shelley Miscavige, allegedly.
She's, yeah, whatever. I'm not afraid of Scientology.
I'm going to send Jenna Elfman to your house, dude.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. I would actually, hey, if y'all are listening and y'all want to send Elizabeth Moss. That's who I want to talk to.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, Olivia Newton-John, I don't really know her other than anything but Grease, but who cares?
Xanadu.
Well, I mean, that I watched a lot as a kid. I mean,
I've actually never seen Xanadu.
Well, I remember from Grease, but also every interview I ever saw with her, because like they do a lot with all the memories of Grease from wherever, she always seemed like the most upbeat, positive person. Yeah.
But I will say that her involvement with Grease, that's one of the more iconic movies, I think, of all time.
Right. And just a little story. The first time I got to go see Grease at the Sanger, I was young, I went with my sister, and I watched it. I remember after it was over, I was like, why didn't they do all the songs? And she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, where is like the song at the end, like, you're the one that I want? And she's like, that's not from the musical. That's Olivia Newton-John original songs that they incorporated. I'm like, no kidding. I was like, well, that was like really like loving those songs. And so I didn't realize that she actually did her own
stuff. And these songs, they have a special meaning to the four of us because...
Yeah.
Remember
the Grease Megamix.
We had chills multiplying.
When I was breaking glass containers in the limo. Yeah.
On the way to your wedding, we all sang the Grease Megamix.
We did.
Good time.
Yeah. We also lost Nichelle Nichols.
I apologize for not knowing who this was originally. It's Uhura.
Yeah, Lieutenant Uhura. From the original Star Trek series and films.
And a very sweet lady as well.
Right, and the one thing that I kind of didn't... I knew that she did it, but I didn't know how influential she was until after she passed, was the fact that she was a recruiter for NASA in the late 70s, early 80s, and a lot of female and astronauts of color basically did it because of her.
So know? Star Trek was in the 60s?
In the 60s.
So, I mean, she's a young black woman in the 60s doing a sci-fi show. I mean, that's...
Well, in the story, which I love this story, because apparently when she did the first season, she was a singer before, too. Like she has two albums, if you want to look at her. She was a singer, and, you know, she did a couple of plays, and then Gene Roddenberry, she did one of his shows before Star Trek called The Lieutenant, and he brought her over to Star Trek, and she wasn't very happy because she didn't have a whole lot of lines. And it's almost like the same complaints Sigourney Weaver had in Galaxy Quest, that she was kind of superfluous. She was just
kind of ironic.
Yeah, she was just kind of there. And she wanted to leave the show. So she's at this this event, and somebody walks up to her and says, a big fan of Star Trek wants to talk to you. And she turns around and she sees Martin Luther King Jr. And she's and she says, well, whoever this fan is about to be disappointed because Dr. King wants to talk to me. And he came up and he was the Star Trek fan.
Wow.
And when he started talking to her about how important she was and stuff like that, she told him, you know, I don't want to upset you, but I'm considering leaving the show. And he said, you can't. He says, because your character, it could be anybody. It's not like specifically a black character. If you leave, they could put another race, another gender, or whatever. But the fact that young black girls can turn on the show and see that you're on the command crew of a bridge, of the bridge of a starship, it's very important for the civil rights movement, and you can't leave the show. And that's the reason she stayed.
What a great story.
Yeah, but
wow, that is I never knew that. I never heard that before.
That's the reason she stayed on the show for all those years.
I fell in love with her from that scene from Search for Spock when she was like seducing that fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And I was like, look at her, looking all hot and stuff. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
You get it.
And apparently a young actress named Whoopi Goldberg, that was the reason she like went into acting.
That is so cool. Yeah. I did not know that either.
So yeah, wow. She pretty much is just known for Star Trek, but her just being on a show in the 60s is very important.
That is. That's really cool, man.
So both you actresses will be missed. Both singers will be missed. And now it is time to nominate this week's Awesome Villager. Gentlemen, who are your nominees and why?
I'm going to nominate Jeremy Allen White from The Bear, just because I was just super impressed with the show. I just wanted to see it because, like I said, I was a fan of his on Shameless. And just his new, I just wanted to kind of support his new project, and I was blown away. I mean, it's better than Shameless, this new show. So, and Shameless was a damn good show.
All right, I'm going to nominate Ron Howard. I enjoyed all of his stories in the Light and Magic documentary, and I was blown away by what he accomplished in 13 Lives. And I think he's actually an underrated director. Because when people talk about like important directors, his name doesn't come up a whole lot. But if you look at his filmography,
it's great.
It's fantastic.
It's diverse,
too. And it's very diverse. I mean, he's done everything from Cocoon to A Beautiful Mind to Arrested Development.
I don't want to say this in like a bad way. He's like a B version of Spielberg.
I get like an apprentice version.
Yeah, like he doesn't like he's got like that Spielberg feel where he'll just do all kinds of different stuff.
Right. And I
can't really remember anything that I would say that he did that was bad.
Right.
There's some that are average.
And there's some that are forgettable, like the, what was it, that Inferno thing and stuff like that. But
Inferno.
The third.
That was the Robert Langdon.
The Da Vinci Code, the third one. Oh, not that necessarily was bad. It was just kind of forgettable. But I mean, when he's on, like with Apollo 13 or Cocoon or Beautiful. Splash.
Didn't he do A Beautiful Mind?
He did A Beautiful Mind, yeah. I mean, he was the executive producer and the narrator of Arrested Development. I mean, I just think he's fantastic.
Yep.
I'm going to pick Kevin Bacon for his performance in They, Them. I think Kevin Bacon, he's one of the few guys who, when I see there's something out that he's in it, I will immediately, like, pique my interest to at least look at it. Don't know if I'm going to like it or not, but he's so good, it'll just draw me in. It's not because of the game.
Have you seen his show that's on Showtime?
No, because I just haven't had a chance to like look for it.
I haven't seen it either. I heard it's very good, though.
But that what was that show that he did on...
With the serial killer?
Yeah.
The Following?
Yeah. Yes. Like, I had no interest in serial killer network shows. I checked out that one, and I loved the first season, and it was because of him. He just draws me in. He's such a great actor.
And he's a great singer-songwriter. With his brother.
I am fair to say that whatever you guys think of the movie, I think y'all will appreciate he's fantastic in the movie.
I'm going to nominate Amber Midthunder from Prey because I think she is a really good talent. And to carry the weight of that kind of movie and to make us like it as much as she did is a pretty big feat. So, gentlemen, if you have to vote for someone other than your own, who would it be?
Amber. She's hot. I could just watch her.
This is hard.
I could just watch her staring into the plains of the lands of the Comanche all day long, even with a predator after her.
I did love her, but I think I gotta go Ron Howard.
This one's tough. It's hard to go against Kevin Bacon. But she was very good. I think I might go Kevin Bacon just because I have a feeling we haven't seen the last of her.
And I'm going to go with Jeremy Allen White because
So we all picked somebody different.
You know what? All right, I was close. I'll switch to Amber.
Thank God.
Okay.
I love when Ryan doesn't like.
I hate ties. What's her last name?
Mid Thunder.
That's awesome. Mid Thunder.
All right. Well, remember, there are many ways to find us: Anchor Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and a host of other platforms. And as always, you can listen to us on theawesomevillage.com, where when you do, you help us out. It's been another fun week. This is Greg.
Ryan.
John.
Glenn.
We'll see you around.